A young man living a life...
Smashing it.
A young man living a rough life has one solace, one means of relaxing. His beautiful little video game. But even this turns into a work obligation.
Fuck's sake.
When he finds out this harmless video game is the reason he ends up fighting for his life for real. It can only be...
Tron.
No.
Ready Player One.
No.
Ender's Game.
No.
Gamer.
No.
War Games.
No.
Existence.
No.
Spy Kids 3D.
No.
Jumanji. I'm Ben Groves.
I'm Rob McFarlane.
And welcome to the Every Movie Ever Podcast.
Thank you.
That's right, we are doing The Last Starfighter, the what this studio needs is its own Star Wars attempt.
Hell yes.
From 1984, directed by a guy who played Mike Myers in Halloween, and possibly...
By a guy.
A guy.
I had not read this before you've just read that out loud. That's fucking outrageous.
That's right. And probably the most important film of the last 50 years,
Unreal.
The Last Starfighter.
Unreal. A, Mike Myers... is Austin Powers.
Right, okay.
Michael Myers is from Halloween, played by Nick Castle, the director of this film.
Okay.
The fact that this is probably the most important film of the last 50 years.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
I can. I've actually got proof of that.
You've got proof of this.
I've got proof. We're going to get into
that.
Well,
you can go fuck yourself because we've just done Tammy and the T-Rex and that is categorically the best and most important film of the last 50 years.
Okay, well, we'll see. We'll see.
You know what I mean?
We'll see.
How are you doing?
Well, as discussed in our cold open in Patreon... I got to pay for that, but please do. It's only £1. I have been better.
Okay.
But I've had my time being super sad, and I now want to get cracking on to sort myself out, getting in productive, getting into some super healthy patterns. And
I'm loving this.
I think the best way to get into that headspace is to show you my guilty shame from my childhood.
Please put it away.
What the kind of Star Wars that I had at home.
Oh, okay.
You know, we got Star Wars at home.
Yeah.
This is Star Wars at home. This is the Star Wars I had at home.
This is Poundland Action Man.
Yeah.
Okay.
How about you, man?
Yeah, fine, man.
Yeah.
Tired. I've got this weird thing at the minute where I don't know what it is. It's like counterproductive procrastination and I cannot snap out of it.
Depression.
Maybe. Maybe. But it's, I set myself up for these big plans.
Mm-hmm.
Not big plans. I set myself up for very normal small plans. And then I'm like, my day off, just going to mow the lawn.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to mowing the lawn. I fucking love a good gardening.
Yeah.
I love a good gardening. My thumb's green as grass, mate. Green as the trees in a summer blossom.
I would argue your thumbs probably scroll more than they green.
No, I don't even scroll. I don't do anything. I just wake up on the morning and I'm like, oh God, I'm tired. I'll just have another 20 minutes. And then I wake up 3 hours later and I'm like, oh, it's too late. Maybe I'll put a film on to wake up to.└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└============················װ└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└└
deep breaths of trying to get some jumping jacks, trying to get some oxygen around my body. Is there something going on in your life that means you can't? Or
I have a collapsed lung. And
oh, funny that.
A fucky knee that I keep going to the gym.
I wonder why you're so unenergized.
Oh, maybe.
Is it because you're not getting the oxygen you need in the morning?
You know what the worst thing is? I didn't even think of this. I genuinely spent all morning in bed literally struggling to wake up and stay awake. And I was
like, what's the problem with me?
What's happening to me? I'm either really overtired or there's something going on.
Just constantly on the edge of yawning.
That was it.
Yawning, dude, man.
I've been yawning. If I start yawning in this episode, I'm not bored.
Fine. Okay. Sum up the show.
That's where I'm at.
Let's we're going to chat about why this is a forgotten gem of an adult's movie for kids.
We're going to get into what is the monomyth.
And why this film might secretly be the most influential film of the last 40 years.
Now it's 40 years, not 50 years.
Right.
All right, yeah, sound.
Yeah.
Sound.
Great.
We're already into continuity issues.
Yeah.
All right, so you've written this week's breakdown then, yeah?
I have, yeah. It's again,
yeah.
You're going to be covering this when you go through your monomyth hero's journey thing that you've not really told me about.
Parts of it. I want to cover one character arc specifically.
Okay. And I don't want to control what you do or say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not that guy, but let's just, I've written the breakdown for us both to do.
Actively controlling what I say and do. Yeah.
Yeah. But
so you do want to be,
but this
that
is
guy.
The last, this is the last bit.
This is the last bit.
This yeah.
Is
yeah, the last yeah. And then we'll get into why this is the most influential film of the last 30 years.
I don't want to control what you say. I've written your parts
for
you.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Yeah.
That's a really good bit. I like this. Do you want me to get going?
Yeah.
All right, there's no titles because lazy, but it's fine.
It's because it's your thing. I don't want to stand on your lawn.
Dude, stand on my... We can both be gardeners.
All right,
come
cool.
Mow my lawn.
Well, I can't get up. You can't get up in the morning.
I can't get up in the morning. I can't move. Fucked. Alex Rogan is a teenager living in a trailer park who excels at an arcade game called Starfighter.
Mm.
After beating the game's highest score, over 1 million, Rob.
Right.
He's approached by a man named Centauri. Centauri?
Centauri.
Centauri.
Yeah.
Who reveals the game was but a test to recruit real pilots for a galactic war. Because God forbid a man have hobbies in this day and age without having to turn it into a fucking side hustle.
Right?
You know what I mean?
It's just one way of relaxing and they're like, but actually it's a recruitment tool
for
war.
Are you bringing anything to the table with it?
Do you want to come to space and fight?
Yeah?
And
are you going to prove yourself as a man?
Right. So it'd be like me playing Balatro and then like a time traveler kicking the door in and going, you've got to beat Hitler at poker.
That's a movie I want to see.
I'm literally
that's a
in
film
my pants.
I want to see immediately.
It's this film.
Yeah. I want to see it. You know
fine.
What I mean? I love how we were teetering on. There could have been a bit there where we're like, it's so hard to be a man in 2025.
No, it's not.
No.
No.
No, but I really like that you've written this in the part that I'm saying to make it.
Yeah.
It's fine. Yeah. Sound.
Yeah.
Alex travels with Centauri to the planet Rylos, where he learns that the Kodan Empire, led by the incredibly camp traitor Zur, is planning an attack on the Star League.
Yeah.
So if any morals are to be found later... In the wrap-up, it's to turn all your loves into work.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just in case you needed ideas for that.
Yeah.
Overwhelmed, Alex asks to return to Earth, and Centauri takes him back. Alex discovers that this whole time, a robot double named Beta has been in his place, which does feel like the sort of thing you should have consent for, because it is possibly the most literal form of identity theft that goes unaddressed in a film ever.
What, having a Beta impersonate you and follow you around and do all the shit that
and then
doing?
Like live your life for you with your real loved
that
one.
Part. Yeah. I was going to say.
Because he doesn't know that they've just cloned him and that there's somebody else living his life for him back on Earth.
I mean, yeah.
I'd be a little bit upset.
He discovers it on his own, doesn't
he?
Yeah,
he does.
He goes home to find himself there.
When a Kodan fish face assassin attacks him on Earth, Alex realizes he cannot run from the fight. He returns to Rylos and discovers all of the other starfighters have been killed.
By three meteorites.
So if any morals are to be found later in the wrap-up, we'll have to remember that above all else, self-doubt saves your life sometimes.
Hell yeah, run away.
With only one ship left, Alex teams up with his alien co-pilot, Grig.
Grig,
to face the Kodan fleet alone.
Using his skills from the game, Alex destroys the enemy's command ship, and in what might be possibly the slowest space battle ever put to screen, ends the threat.
It's like watching sea ships.
Yeah, I didn't realize that this was the big end battle until it was over, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Four spaceships flying through treacle.
Zur escapes, but the Kodan are defeated. Mm. Alex is celebrated as a hero and offered a role in rebuilding the Starfighter corpse. I hate saying corpse like that.
It's supposed to be corps, but that's why.
Oh, yeah.
The corps. Marine Corps.
Oh, is that how it's spelled?
Yeah. Fuck me up for years, that did. Because I always used to say corpse.
Yeah, but I'm 36 and I've never...
Yeah.
I guess I've never had a reason to read that.
Exactly.
This is fucking with me. Am I reading Starship Troopers wrong?
Yeah.
Okay. Fuck. All right. He returns to Earth to say goodbye and invites his girlfriend Maggie to join him whilst totally abandoning his brother. He does. He just... Fuck off, Mikey.
Right.
All right, I'm going to go. I'm taking Fanny. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
Honestly, I've double checked. Best his brother gets is a limp fist bump, literally puts his hoe before his bro.
Yep.
So if we do get any morals from this movie, it's that a tall enough drink of water is thicker than any blood.
Yep.
I have got the worst deja vu of my life because I feel like you've made me read something. I feel like you've made me read gets a limp fist bump a couple times before in the past. And I don't know where from or why. Or in what context, I've said those words in that order.
Right.
And it feels weird to me because now I'm caught in a psychological loop where I'm doubting
that
this is
real. You sure we weren't talking about limp and fists and other...
Limp Fisket.
Limp Fisket. There we go. That's what it was. We were talking about the popular band Limp Fisket.
Yeah, with Fred Durst.
Look, that's the sort of vague plot, right? We had this on VHS when I was a kid and it was one of the ones that wasn't even taped off the TV.
Right.
So a huge number of ours were on like... Maxell cassettes.
Oh, dude, Maxell was the ones.
Spine,
yeah, dude.
With the spine sticker.
Yeah.
That it was like written on in biro and the 100%. Bio would run out.
Yeah.
And this was like an honest to godness purchased film.
Honest to godness.
I misspoke. Which maybe 20%, maybe 20% of the films we had were actually had like cover art.
Yeah.
So it felt as premium as Star Wars because my version of A New Hope had advert breaks and this didn't.
Cerveza Cristal.
Not Cerveza Cristal, but like early 90s terrestrial TV adverts
for
like Scottish widows.
Yeah,
all this kind of stuff.
There's a moose loose in this hoose.
Right.
Remember so, wine gums?
That was a thing. Right, exactly. I still love wine gums.
Yeah.
But like because I didn't have to hit fast forward past half an episode of Inspector Morse, I kind of thought that this was like...
Oh, this is legit. Creme de la creme, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Big and cinema.
I didn't know. It was like Star Wars, Aliens, this, all the same.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized whilst researching that I wasn't maybe that off base because huge amounts of the ships and that kind of stuff are designed by Ron Cobb, who did loads of design work on Alien.
Really?
Yeah. And like loads of he's like a classic sci-fi production designer.
Incredible.
You've seen this before
because
we watched it together. I thought you were going to see it for the first time. And I was like,
no.
I bet without nostalgia, this isn't going to hit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you were like, oh, I have seen this.
Yeah, dude, I was in the exact same boat as you. I was like, this is going to suck because I don't ever remember seeing this before in my life. There's scenes in this film that I've incorrectly remembered being parts of other films.
Right.
So, oh my God, I Googled it before we started. What's
Flight
the name
Navigator.
Of that film? Flight of the Navigator.
Yeah, yeah, the one
Jesus
you Googled.
Jesus Christ, your brain is good. Flight of the Navigator. Right. I had assumed that there is a scene where he's in a ship and the screen, you have to be face on for the screen.
Yeah,
I misremember that being in a different film.
Right, brilliant.
Flight of the Navigator.
I'd misremembered him getting sucked into the computer game.
Oh,
Tron.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. Tron, of course.
Which I'll bring up again later. But yeah, it's one of those films I think I watched it a few years ago, but then that was the first time since I was a kid.
And okay.
Yeah.
I haven't seen this since I was a kid.
Right.
And I don't fully remember it. So watching it through was
interesting.
It was interesting in a way where I was almost getting like passive nostalgia. It was nostalgia for bits that I didn't realize was this film.
Right, okay.
So yeah, I was kind of watching something for the first time in my adult life and going, oh God, how good is this? Oh, this was great.
I remember this.
Didn't even fucking know it was this film. And I loved it. It was incredible. Right. My whole thing about 80s cinema. We're on a weird 80s kick at the minute.
Well,
and I'm fucking loving it.
This one's linked to a lot of our previous ones, and I'll get back to how.
Please do, because we've been linking all of these ones together recently.
I feel
like we're sort of unraveling the universe.
We are.
And I'm not sure that we should be, because I've seen films from this era directed by people.
Is this going to be like that film Pi by Darren Aronofsky?
I've never seen it. That guy, he annoys me.
He starts unpicking at the fabric of the universe with numbers and then starts slowly losing
his
mind.
Here we go. Fucking hell. Mother's about religion. Shut up. Someone breaks a sink.
Great
Calm
film.
Down. Fucking wank. My favorite part about this film and the films that we're on at the moment is the stories are unapologetically so straightforward.
They are.
And so to the point.
Yes.
That you don't get bogged down. That there is subtext if you want to look for it.
Yeah.
It's not big game changing stuff.
No.
It's not any of this.
It's incredibly easily digestible.
It's so fucking easy to take
in. In film terms, this is a smoothie.
It's a smoothie. That's what it is. It's a peanut butter. It's a sprinkling of whey, so there's a bit of meat to it.
Yeah.
And then there's just like a banana, some vanilla milkshake, shit in there. Do you know what I mean? It's fucking banging. But the story, it's so straight to the point. There's no fluff.
Nope.
The plot points are super straightforward.
Yep.
The subtext surrounding like ethics, building an empire, potential genocide. It's not there. Because you don't need
don't
it.
Don't look at that.
You don't need it.
Right, yeah.
Because this isn't a focus on the bad guys or the bad guys' plans. This isn't a movie to make the bad guys look cool.
Nope.
This is a movie to inspire kids to follow the whatever it is that they're great at.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter what the bad guys are up to.
Seize opportunities.
You focus on you and you seize your own opportunity. That is exactly the fucking point I've written down here, buddy. It's just a stereotypical, easy to follow, fun as fuck, good guys being good guys, adventure, following a classic hero journey.
So
it's just what it is.
The writer says that he was inspired because he had a lot of time on his hands And he
just
was
in between shanking people.
No, because Nick Castle didn't write it. This is Nick Castle just directed it.
Okay.
The Last Starfighter was written by, and I need to Google his name.
Do it.
Because I need to, wait, it's not going to help. Jonathan R. Batuul. Let's call him Batuul.
Batuul.
Batuul. Jonathan Batuul.
Don't say his name three times. He will appear.
He'll write a banging script.
That's it.
Right.
Bah, you're a pilot.
He literally saw a kid play in arcade games whilst he was sat in a cafe reading King Arthur book. And it's such an Arthurian, like...
I love this.
Sword in the stone. It's the sword in the stone, but the high score in the video game.
Yeah, sword in the stone. Dude, I've got this in my hero's notes, in my 12-step hero's notes.
Hit me with the 12-step hero's notes. I got to get into this.
Okay, so the hero journey is something that you're going to be familiar with because you're well-read. You're like old as fuck books.
Thank you, my darling.
I'm familiar with the hero's journey, but just not in this context.
Right, okay.
But this was like a fun thing for me to get into.
No, hero's journey is great. It does ruin films slightly.
It does, because now I'm fucked, because it applies to everything.
And a lot of the films that you've shown me that like, oh, it's really good, and I'm just like, eh. It's because I'm like, it's just the monomyth. Yeah. It's just the man with a thousand faces.
The hero with a thousand faces from 1949.
The man with a thousand faces sounds like a B movie. The hero.
Or an anime.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But yeah, so it's essentially, this is for, I'm sure 90% of all of you are familiar with this. A lot of the listeners are well read.
Or watch Rick and Morty with the story train where Joseph Campbell shows up and kick coaches them on the same thing.
I haven't seen that because I don't support active sex criminals, but that's fine. For those of us out there that do, you know what I'm about to say, but it's a 12-step program, much like AA, where it's the hero's journey from start to finish. It's ordinary world.
Yep.
It's a call to adventure. It's the initial refusal. It's the meeting of the mentor. It's crossing the threshold. Test to allies and enemies. Then it's the approach to the inmost cave.
Yep.
Then it's the ordeal. Then it's the reward or season the sword, which we've just pointed out, sword and stone. It's the road back, the resurrection, and then it's the return with elixir.
Yes.
But that's the whole journey thing. But again, seeing as I didn't understand, I didn't know this
before.
Intimately, so I've broken it down. I've broken this film
down. This is a good place
down.
To start with it.
It's a great place to start with it. I had so much fun. My day off today, couldn't get up. Couldn't mow the lawn.
Yeah.
What I could do was watch Last Starfighter four times and figure out the main story arc in it.
The reason I know the hero's journey is because it's the same one that the Fool takes in the 12 major tarot cards. So the Fool starts out very kind of naive and unwise. He meets the magician.
Mm-hmm.
He ends up going to meet the high priestess. It's all of these stories, The Hidden Fortress, Star Wars, this are all kind of based on that whole thing. So you've got the Hanged Man where you're at your weak moment, but then you look down and you see the treasure and blah, 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 blah. And so that's all my tattoos are based on that. So how does The Last Starfighter conform to the oldest story of time?
Are you ready for this?
I am ready
for this.
Because
I've had so much fun today doing this. So we're going to do step by step, and this is Alex's journey.
Right.
As the last Starfighter.
Nice.
So Ordinary World is in his trailer park. He yearns
fixing
for more.
TVs.
Fixing TVs. Restoring power to Martha's trailer or whatever her name is. She needs to watch her soaps. That's Alex's life. This is his ordinary world, right? But we see that he wants freedom. He wants to go off to university.
Yeah.
He's waiting for a loan letter, this, that, and the other. His call to adventure, step two. He beats the Starfighter video game.
He does.
Centauri shows up in the star car.
The magician.
The magician shows up in the star car.
Yeah.
And reveals the game was a test.
Yep.
That was it. Congratulations, you're in. Step three, his refusal to the call. He's like, no.
Mm-hmm. quite literally.
Yeah, no.
They literally just read Joseph Campbell's book and went, looked at the steps and went, just write 12 scenes.
He's overwhelmed. He's scared. He doesn't know what's happening. It's a whole new world for him. Think about it from Alex's perspective.
Yep.
He knows that A, star car travel is a thing.
Yeah.
He knows that aliens exist.
Yep.
He knows that an alien can reveal its face by wiping it with a handkerchief. He knows that...
Yeah, because Centauri's human disguise is just that. It's a face mask he puts on and off with a handkerchief.
With a handkerchief. A brief wipe of a handkerchief. Imagine the makeup industry if this became popular on Earth.
Imagine not just on Rylos. To beauty standards generally.
Oof.
Everyone you'd see, you'd be like, they're fit, and I hate all of them because I know it's just
a handkerchief.
It's just a handkerchief.
Just a handkerchief away from being a monster. That was awful. We can cut that out, probably.
Nah.
But then think about it deeper. He loved this video game. That was his one solace.
Yeah.
His one source of enjoyment. You can't trust that anymore because no. It was a fucking test.
Yeah.
So what happens if he starts enjoying crayons and colouring? He's just sort of like, well,
he's going to get pulled into the Crayola world.
This is what I mean. He's going to
become
2D.
We're in danger from the pens.
The erasers are chasing down the pencil lines. He's like, well, fuck, I can't enjoy anything. Yeah, his trust is gone. Yeah. This is insane. So obviously he's going to refuse it because he's shitting himself about everything he loves and enjoys. Meeting the mentor, step four, Centauri, and later Grig.
Grig's the mentor.
Grig is the mentor. I think Centauri is sort of like mentor-ish.
So
he's mentor light.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? He's the introduction to he's the magician.
Yeah, he's diet mentor.
Right, exactly. Whereas Grig is kind of more your emperor or your hierophant.
Helps Alex grow into his hero arc.
Shows
him
the rules, shows him the lore, trains him. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
now you're Red Leader.
Yeah.
He's Obi-Wan or Yoda, depending
Centauri's
on which
movie. Obi-Wan. Because Obi-Wan's the magician.
Okay.
And the magician is the one who the first person who meets the character and takes them on the journey is always the magician.
Okay.
Because once you do the full loop and you do the whole loop, you go back round to being the fool, but the magician is you.
Ooh.
So in a sequel, what would happen is you'd have the hero's journey again, but they would meet Alex and then he would take them on their journey and that's what happens.
So Last Starfighter 2.
Yes.
Or the first of the new Starfighters.
Yes.
Whatever the fuck. That's a working title. Is his little brother.
Yes,
and now
exactly.
Alex is Grig.
It would be that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I like that.
And that's how it works in Star Wars with Luke then trains the new blah, 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 blah.
Kind of.
That's how it's supposed to work.
Yeah, but then
J.J. Abrams broke it.
And then he just sort of like, Palpatine's back.
Yeah, yeah.
After 9,000 years. And also he has a full army of a million ships.
That and he all just of them are Death Stars.
Yeah, he just decided to keep them all a secret. For why? No reason.
No reason.
Dick. So meeting the mentor, that's done, dusted. Five, cross. You fucked me with this. You Sean Connery'd yourself earlier.
Yeah,
I've caught that. Dickhead.
Yeah, enjoy that.
Crossing the threshold.
Yes.
I wrote this. That's fucked me over now.
Nice.
So he's thrust back into the adventure. The alien assassin, Zando Zan, or the interdimensional...
Hit beast. Yeah.
The interdimensional hit beast.
That's what Old Rob was trying to be in the music industry.
Yeah.
I was trying to be an international hit beast.
Yeah,
Walk into the studio, bang, it's a hit.
Hated that. That was very good, but also that made me cringe on a level that I'm uncomfortable with.
Good.
My tits hurt. That's where we're at right now.
Good.
Fucking hell. He tries to kill him and he realizes that he cannot run from his destiny. He's too far gone now. This is his make or break moment. He's in it. He's fully committing. Six, the tests, the allies and the enemies. The tests is the training, the fighting simulations, and the real battles, which all happen within 4 minutes, but feels like 40 minutes.
Yep.
The enemies, which are the Kodan Armada, which is about 11 ships. That's it.
Yeah.
And then he blows up the big boss ship and then
That's it.
That should be where it is, but no. Seven, approach the inmost cave. This is the build up to the final battle. Final battle is like there's one ship left. It's a one-on-one. Yeah, it's 1v1 on Rust.
And it crashes into a tiny moon.
It does. A tiny moon it looks enormous, but it's either the ship is monumentally big and perspective is weird in space.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not a scientist. No. I'm but a gardener.
It's like somebody opened MS Paint and just dragged two GIF files together and just went boop.
Is it GIF or GIF?
Let's not get into that can of worms.
Okay.
I'm not doing it.
But you subscribe to GIF?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Of course I've subscribed to GIF.
That's interesting.
It's not Jod. It's not our Lord Jod.
No, but it is Jesus.
Right, come on. Come on. What are we talking about now?
Anyways, the last Starfighter left. It's the big boss man.
There we go.
It's do or die, buddy.
Yeah.
The inmost cave. And then number eight, the ordeal. Alex and Grig launch a desperate assault on the Kodan fleet.
They do.
Suicide mission, and everything is on the line. Number nine, the reward. Seizing the sword.
Which he literally does.
He does. He destroys the enemy fleet using the Death Blossom weapon, which is essentially spin around in circles and panic shirt.
Yeah.
Panic shoot.
Every shirt. Give me any shirt and it'll be a panic shirt in a few minutes.
Just give me a few minutes and every shirt is a panic shirt. That is it. Yeah. He returns victorious.
Yeah.
Now he's a legend. Now we get Star Wars medal ceremony-ish, kind of. Like he's stood in the corner of a building and everyone goes, ah! The road back, he returns to
the planet Eve.
He returns
series by David Attenborough.
Earth, briefly.
Right.
where Maggie and the trailer park community now see him in a new light, but he knows he doesn't belong there anymore. He's too big for it, buddy. It's a transitional moment right now. Eleven's the resurrection. Alex faces one final emotional challenge.
Can he open up to his beautiful girlfriend and say, come with me? And he does.
He does.
And she says, no, I'm all right.
No, I'm going. I like the trailer park. Can't you just stay here?
Wait for his slow lift to take him back into the spaceship. Well, before she decides, actually, I will go to space now you mention it.
That's what it is. And then there you go. That's the resurrection. He's back. He takes Maggie with him. Happy ending. Everyone's lovely.
Recipe for a mad toxic relationship, though, isn't it? Because if she wants to leave him, she's literally in space.
Yeah. You can go home. That's no trouble whatsoever. Yeah. You can sign up to my Starfighter program where I teach people to be brilliant.
Right.
And then you can have a ship. Right. Because at the minute, what are you bringing to the table?
Right.
It's 2025. You want equality. Your video game's now a war test, all right?
I'm glad you're on the hero's journey. I'm glad you're...
I like this.
Joseph Campbell is the guy.
Yeah, he is.
Joseph Campbell is, when it comes to story, he kind of looked at a lot of mythological systems and just went, oh, this is all the same. Wrote this incredible book, The Hero with a Thousand Faces.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good cheat sheet to getting a decent story quickly. Yeah. But it also, now you know it, you'll, any film that follows it, you'll go, yeah, it's fine.
But it's...
It's that.
Yeah.
And I've seen that a million times before. Speaking of seen a million times before, what did you think of the CGI?
Okay.
Be honest. Because for those listeners that haven't seen this film, describe the CGI.
It's easy to take the piss out of the CGI in this.
Please do.
It's very easy to. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to be the bigger man. I'm going to take the higher road.
Right.
Because I feel like... As a 36-year-old man watching this film for the first time in many, many years, seeing the CGI essentially be PlayStation 1 level graphics brought a level of nostalgia that added to my experience, because it's a
museum piece. It's interesting.
It's incredible. Right. It's fucking incredible. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's fucking awful. It's fucking awful.
The scenes in the asteroids are...
They've bookended it. Right, this is my theory, right? They bookended the effects.
Explain.
At the beginning of the film where they do the star car and it's taken off through Earth and it's doing this thing, they've put a shitload of money into it and it looks okay.
Yeah.
But it's dark and there is one object on the screen, right? And you're like, fucking hell, this is all right for the early 80s, man.
Right, 84. Jesus. Yeah.
84, this is all right. And then the second we get to any sort of travel, so the traveling through the wormhole is just red dots.
Yep.
With no speed change whatsoever. Nope. Just red dots appear.
Yeah.
That's fine. It's fine.
Yep.
And then you start getting environmental renders where you are like, this literally looks like an overcooked meatball that someone dropped a thumbtack on.
Yeah.
That's...
They're very good at flat surfaces. The second you ask for anything rough.
Any texture.
It's gone. But okay. You're right. I've written a spirited defense for your over-enthusiastic, vitriolic criticism of the effect that I was expecting.
I'm kind of into it though, man. I'm here to be objective.
Allow me to ignore your objectivity,
okay,
and just pretend that you're a bastard about it, because I've not written the alternative.
I'll give you a sentence. It was like it was done in crayons. It was bloody terrible.
Right, I
hear
you.
Morph had better effects than this.
I hear you. You're not wrong. I hear you. But this came out in 1984.
Okay. Right?
So 18 months or so after the original Tron, which gets sucked off all the time for being the best, the first, right?
Yeah.
This is a year and a half later.
Okay.
You've got to place it in the context of how incredibly early this is to fully digital effect shots where not a single pixel has seen the outside of a computer. It's all done in the box.
Yeah.
Was brand new.
Yeah,
and these frames are 3,000 by 5,000 pixels. It's 5K, right?
That's nutty.
Right. Of gunships.
1984.
Right. Gunships fighting each other and launching into space, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the same year the Nintendo Entertainment System NES was launched.
Do you see what I'm saying, though?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So when we covered Tammy and the T-Rex last week, you mentioned a different film by Stuart Raffel, the director, called Ice Pirates.
I did.
Right. And in that film, there's a time travel space warp scene.
There is.
And all of those digital effects were done by a company called Digital Productions.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Also did the 27 minutes of effect shots in this film.
27 minutes.
27 minutes of fully CGI rendered film.
Barely felt like an hour.
Right. But for 1984, 27 minutes of full CG, they're like, are
That's
you
fucking
insane?
Nutty. Right? That's actually nutty.
It's a small startup that had a dream about like how films might be made in the future.
Okay.
And they did it on a Cray XMP supercomputer, mm-hmm. right? So for the 300 scenes containing computer graphics,
yep.
each one contained an average of 250,000 polygons.
Holy shit.
Now, it looked like five, but apparently not. Right?
No. Dude, play Tomb Raider 1 on PS1.
Yeah, okay,
Those
fair.
Tits look like five. All right?
They said it would be quicker and cheaper to do. They did say it would take half the time and about a third to half the cost of the traditional kind of doing it practically.
Okay.
They did it all in the computer. So they got given about 14 mil to make the movie.
Fucking hell.
Right. So they started renting this supercomputer. Now, the Cray supercomputer I mentioned, the XMP, had a 100 megahertz processor.
Right.
Now, for those of you that aren't incredibly tech savvy, let me explain. When the lease, because they were renting this, that when the company said, you can't rent this anymore, you've got to buy it.
Right.
It cost them $18 million. So Digital Production spent $18 million buying this supercomputer. It had 100 megahertz processing speed. To put that in context for the non-computer users, the PlayStation 2 had three times the processing speed.
Jesus Christ, man.
The mobile phone in my hand mm-hmm. is over 24 times faster than the supercomputer that they bought for $18 million to do this film.
$18 million on a... Just bear me 1 second, sorry. Just 1 second. I'm on a conversion website.
Right.
So $18 million just for the computer on this film, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so
which Digital Productions bought to make the film.
Got you.
And others.
Got you.
Right.
Okay. So the budget of this film was 14 million, yeah?
Yeah.
So 14 million in today's money is 43 million.
Yeah.
So 18 million back then is 55 and a half million today. So
they spent 50 mil on 1/24th of my phone.
That's... I don't know how to process that properly.
But at the year this came out, the NES was the contemporary console. So you can see how like some of the shots in this film aren't half bad.
No.
NES computing era.
Beginning and end are great. And they've planned it specifically. The middle bit I feel like was ropey, but that's mm-hmm. because there was a lot of textures and a lot of environments that were running hand in hand.
I think taken in the context of like, this is so early.
Mm.
You know, if you think 70s sci-fi, you think 2001. You think Alien.
Yeah.
Aliens was 1986. This is 2 years before Aliens.
Which is fucking insane. Right? Again, it's insane.
I do feel, and also like the digital effects are great. The practical effects, there's only really one that's worth noting, which is when the beta unit robot transforming into him.
Bro. My note here exactly
Please.
Is on the practical effects, and it's the creature effects in this are incredible. The boss-eyed beta unit, as it's becoming Alex, is mental.
With it, basically, it's got thin skin over its face, and as he breathes, it expands and contracts.
But that skin looks both wet and sticky.
Yeah.
And that
is hard
to achieve.
That sentence
is going to infuriate one listener in particular.
Right, okay.
And it's just made my day knowing.
Good, that you managed to get it in.
I've managed to get it in.
The good news is that there was another practical effect in the film that they had to cut, which is when the villain shows that he's caught a spy. He beams his head in.
Oh, he does, yeah. Right. Caves his skull in with a laser.
right. Yeah. They had to cut most of that. So Nick Castle points out, it hurts when you see someone else's brains fry. Ron Cobb, who was the guy who designed a lot of the film, he adds that there was more to this scene, which included the entire head melting away. This was not added to the final cut of the film because of how gruesome it was. At the time of its release, the PG-13 rating hadn't been developed. So if kept that shot in, the whole film would have been
R-rated.
Put as an R-rated. And it would have really suffered there.
That would have struggled.
Because like the R-rated movie list at the time, you had Evil Dead, Hannibal Holocaust.
Yeah.
Hannibal Holocaust. And Hannibal Holocaust and Evil Dead. You celebrated the R rating because it was a thing, right? It put you in a particular club.
Yes.
Can you imagine the Stellar Starfighter turning up to that party?
I would like it more, and it would be in my Blu-ray collection right now. But also...
But I don't know if you would, because you'd be like, there's no killings in it.
No, the head melting would have been enough.
Just that one that would few be enough. Seconds.
Because of how campy the rest of the story is. Right. And how...
Star Wars at home, the rest
Star
of it
Wars
is,
at home,
is
and how, it would
wholesome.
Be, it's
and
Tammy
like,
and the T-Rex, but with a head melting scene.
Right, okay.
It's what it is.
Because
it's that era of movie
right,
making.
Because
right?
the tone of the film is so warm, and so the Goonies, and so like, try hard and seize opportunities, kids, and you'll do well.
Yeah.
Head melt.
Yeah. It's a tonal shift for the movie. But I feel like it would have ruined its commercial release, and everyone would have been like, this is fucking nutty.
Yeah.
Me personally, though, I would have seen
right, okay.
that would have made me enjoy it more, but it's
Fine.
Because I'm broken.
Yeah.
In the head. The sets, mate.
Right.
The sets in this film. We watched this together,
we
were sitting there, we were having a laugh and a giggle, and this, that, and the other. Some scenes that came on, I was like, bud, this is money.
Lots of extras in full prosthetics.
Dude, the scene where they're on Rylos in the control booth, like the command room, I was like, what the fuck am I looking at?
They've got three monitors.
It's not three monitors. It's three rows of monitors. I watched it today.
Okay, yeah.
It's three rows of monitors that makes like... When we lived in London, we went to Harrods that once
because
we heard that they had personal submarines.
Yes.
And we thought it was fucking stupid. We wanted to go laugh at rich people.
Yeah. Little did we know, a decade later, Titan submersible would be turned into
exactly,
the size of a pea.
Exactly. So we went to look at these stupid personal submarine things, which were ridiculous. But
and
we
also
went,
on like the 11th floor, which is weird.
Yeah, it's really, the opposite
basement.
Of what a submarine right? should be doing. Yeah. Right. And then the TV room, they had that wall.
Yeah.
That wall TV that was like 9 screens and it cost like $500,000.
Yeah.
So... There's that in 1984, but bigger somehow in this film. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, that's Harrod's Wall times 4.
Yeah.
And it's in a 1984 movie where everyone...
40 years ago.
Oh, they couldn't afford hairlines for most of the aliens. It's just forehead. There is just forehead and it's mental. There's tons of stuff like this, man. The practical effects do it justice. Digital effects, not so much. I've got a note here that just says the character comparison. And I think this is an interesting way to look at the film.
Okay.
This film was made to be enjoyed by kids, right? Because it's an adult style film for children.
Yeah, it's so that your 10-year-old thinks that they're watching a grown-up
a
film
big
and they're
boy
like,
movie.
Whoa, it's
exactly.
got melting heads and
Yeah.
And
then, but then also on the counter side of that, watching it as an adult, you're watching a kid's film.
Yeah.
Made for adults.
It's
an adult film made for kids, but it's a kids film made for adults as well. So there's something there on both ends of the spectrum, and you're both watching the same film, but there are different elements that speak to you on different levels.
Yep.
And I think it's all down to the good guys in this are the most well-rounded characters in the whole film. The good guys
nothing's
too much of a problem. Everyone's cool, calm and collected.
Yep.
Everyone's stressed, rightly so, but everyone's relatable and everyone remains grounded to a point. They have real life struggles.
Yep.
They have relatable ethics and morals that we can all look at and go, yep, that makes perfect sense. The thing with The Last Starfighter is it's where when the bad guys come in, and I always get a bit twitchy around bad guys, especially recently, because I feel like movies have taken a tonal shift in the last sort of like couple decades.
Right, where they try and make the bad guy relatable.
The bad guys are cool.
Yeah.
And they have sort of like, they have like misguided emotions towards like
it's an
underlying well-meaning thing.
Right.
And it kind of takes all of the, it takes all of the oomph out of their defeat.
Yes.
And now you just kind of feels like
it
you're bullying.
Morally conflicting.
Yeah,
like,
you're bullying a trauma victim at the end of the day.
Yeah,
and you're like,
am
I rooting for this?
Right.
What's happening? And it all gets very grey and very murky and very complex. And you're like... It's interesting, but it's not fun, Karate Kid, beat them up, sweep the leg. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's nothing like that.
Yeah.
This is the polar opposite of that. You've got bad guys that are campy, barely functioning, obviously like
they
misguided.
They are the most 2D.
Evil. Yeah.
Why are you doing this? Because I'm evil.
But you look at them and you're like, I can't wait for you to get your dick kicked off. I cannot wait for you to get your ass handed to you on a silver plate. And it's that, it doesn't matter whether you're an adult or child, you have that like visceral feeling inside
100%.
You. I'm wanting this to happen.
Yeah.
Bad guys are bad guys. Good guys are going to win. And when they do, it's a little fist bump. It's a little, yes. But then this film goes one step further.
Right. How so?
Trailer Park Residence, Rob.
Right.
ignore this film. If I say to you, Trailer Park Residence, the image in your mind, does it conjure up some sort of...
I'm thinking Ozark. I'm thinking...
Oh, you're thinking that side?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you watch posh shit though.
Okay.
Because my mind went to Trailer Park Boys and sort of over-caricatured people, rednecks kind of being played for comedy.
Yeah,
and it's like,
yeah.
Look how goofy this is.
Yeah.
Look how goofy this man is. He lives in a caravan. And it's always played as this big over-the-top
thing.
Look
at these funny paws.
Yeah. Oh my God, he's so poor, he's eating soup out of a tin. And it's like, that's not a joke. That's not a joke. That's just convenient, if anything. Right. Less washing up, buddy.
Right. He can't afford a bowl.
There you go.
Right.
You this like, is it.
Is this what we're laughing at now?
Yeah. And in this film, The Last Starfighter from 1984, mm-hmm. written by Michael Myers, Nick Castle. Directed by.
Yeah.
Nick Castle. Not Frank Castle, because that's the Punisher. I've been saying Frank Castle all week.
Not Mike Myers. Michael Myers.
There you go. Michael Myers from Halloween. It's directed by him. You got the trailer park full of just wholesome, normal,
happy people. Dealing with what they
going
have,
going about
not
their
the,
day.
Not what they don't have.
Acting within their means. And there's a scene in this film where it has the opportunity to ruin all of that.
Right.
Where there is the, I can't remember his name. It's the elderly black gentleman who is hanging out near the arcade game.
Yeah,
when he's
about
to get a high score.
Key and Peele would kind of satirize him as the magical Negro.
Exactly.
He turns up sweeping. That's what, literally the name of the
I know,
the stereotype.
I just didn't expect you to say it out loud. Okay, that's fine.
Where he kind of sweeps around the white characters until they have a moment of conflict.
Yeah, and then
he drops some homespun southern accented wisdom.
Yeah, just some lovely stuff.
And then they're like, oh my God, that unnamed black man who sweeped clean to me is so right.
Yeah.
Who would have known?
Who'd have
and then that's
it?
The last you see of them.
That's it.
I was worried it was going to be that.
Okay. And they had an opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
Because they were fixing an aerial on a trailer at one point where it's beta.
Yeah.
Is helping. Beta's paranoid of being assassinated at this point.
Yeah, the robot double is like, they know that I'm the robot double and they're going to send aliens to assassinate me.
Exactly.
Whilst I'm trying to deal with this TV
aerial. Helping the magical man.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it. I'm just helping the magical man put an aerial up on a caravan.
Right, okay.
And there's moments where it's like, it could have been over the top. It could have been slapsticky, but it's not. It's just sort of like, Alex, can you hold the pole, please? I'm trying to do a job.
Yeah.
And I was
like,
that is the most refreshing thing. It's wholesome. It's well put together.
Mm-hmm.
It's genuine. And this is it. It's genuine.
It's genuine. It does something that a lot of lighter family comedies are afraid to do now, which is it's sincere. It actually sincerely means what it's saying, and it doesn't undercut itself.
That's such a good
comedy.
Way to put it.
Like, so much, I kind of call it Joss Whedon writing, where a dramatic moment will happen, and then someone will go, so that just happened.
Oh, I thought, dude, I was about to fucking rage at you. I thought you were saying that the wholesome shit is Joss Whedon writing.
No.
And I was
like,
what are you talking about? That guy's a monster.
We had the sincerity era.
Yeah.
And then what was so novel about Joss Whedon's writing is he undercut it. And it made you feel like you were in on the joke because you're like, oh, I see. He's undercut the sincerity of the moment. So now the writer knows that this isn't real life. And that's kind of clever.
Yeah.
And I feel so tired of it now. Like, I wish...
Same.
I wish a Marvel movie or a large blockbuster could just have something happen and have the characters sincerely react to it without worrying about if they still look cool or funny.
I don't care about people looking cool, though, because I'm not a cool person.
Right.
And I feel like it's taken me a long time to be able to sit
embrace
and accept
that.
But I'm really living my goofy, fun uncle.
Right.
Like, this is my goofy, fun uncle arc, right?
Right. So, goofy, fun uncle arc is a good in.
Okay.
To a couple of goofy, fun uncles of your film history.
Ooh.
That are in this.
Okay.
So, we've already mentioned Nick Castle, also known as Michael Myers from Halloween.
Yep.
You know his work.
I do.
And he directed this.
He also wrote Escape from New York.
Right.
Kurt Russell, which is kind of
blowing
my mind.
Right. There's also three other people in this film that you know.
Okay.
So Catherine Mary Stewart, who plays Maggie, the girlfriend.
Yes.
She was in.
She was in. No, because you're trying to trap me here. The other night we were watching and I was like, oh, she's in these films that I've seen. And this
Weekend
is
at Bernie's.
Weekend at Bernie's.
Who plays the corpse in Weekend at Bernie's?
The evil scientist Wackenstein.
Wackenstein from Tammy and the T-Rex last week's film.
Yeah.
So the girlfriend in this film
yeah.
was in a film with Dr. Wackenstein from Tammy and the T-Rex. Lance Guest, who's our lead actor, he plays Alex. He was in Halloween 2.
Is he?
He is. He's the boyfriend, apparently. I've not seen it.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. He is the boyfriend in Halloween 2?
Yeah. And he's in Jaws the Revenge.
Oh, my God. He is.
Now.
Dude.
Dan O'Herlihy.
Yeah.
He's the CEO of OCP in RoboCop. So you know all those scenes with the ED-209? And you've got that, the old
guy
man
at the end of the desk who's giving the approval and whatnot. Yeah.
He might have gone. He's Grig.
Shut the fuck up. Is that Grig?
Grig.
Shut.
Grig is played by the CEO of OCP.
That is fucking mental. That's fucking mental.
Isn't it?
That's incredible. Also, I thought you were trying to catch me out with Maggie because when we were watching this film together and I was like, I know her from somewhere. And it was from my formative years.
Right.
Where I was like, I remember her being very attractive. She was in one episode of Knight Rider that I remembered her from.
Yeah. And I was
quite a big part of my childhood.
Very, very impressed that you were able to recognize this actress from one episode of Knight Rider. You were like, you sat there going, I've seen her in something. I've seen her in something. And then you went, was she a Knight Rider? And I was like, I don't know, Ben. This, like, I've not seen this film for a long time. And then you went, let me Google it. And you looked, she was in one episode,
which
is either a barely got on away with coincidence or you have a photographic wank bank memory.
I was very young
when
I was watching Knight Rider, so it was more sort of like a schoolboy crush era.
Okay, fair.
But I'm gonna
stop edging you now. I'm gonna tell you why this is the most important film of the last 20 years.
Let me strap in because I'm about to get angry.
Okay, so we talked about them earlier. Digital Productions.
Yeah.
Who made 27 minutes of effect shots for this film.
Yeah.
An unprecedented number of full CG shots for a film at the time and for a long time afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
They had a lot of employees. They made a number of films. Here are some of the people that started their careers with this company when it was about 10 employees.
Okay.
Right? So Sherry McKenna.
Yeah.
She worked at Digital Productions.
Okay.
Worked on this film.
Okay.
She would go on to create a small little series of games called Abe's Odyssey.
No.
Yep.
Okay.
All the cutscenes in those, remember how impressive they were?
The PlayStation 1 graphics.
Right.
Exactly what I mentioned earlier.
Kevin Rafferty. He worked at Digital Productions.
Rafferty.
He ended up being the lead computer graphics supervisor at ILM for all the Star Wars prequels.
Rafferty. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Big dog at ILM.
Yeah.
Kevin Bjork. He was a technical director and lead layout artist for the films A Bug's Life and Toy Story.
Oh, dude. Well, there's a weird thing going on in my friendship group at the moment. We're fucking obsessed with Bug's Life and it's just happened.
Okay.
No clue why. Fine. There's no explanation. But
right.
That's fucking amazing.
We'll watch it on Friday.
Yes, please.
Stefan Fangmeier.
Okay.
Lead VFX for Saving Private Ryan, Terminator 2, Judgment Day, Twister and The Perfect Storm.
That's three banging movies and one aggressively mediocre. Which one is which?
I'll let you guess.
Let us know in the comments.
The Perfect Storm. We know it. Yeah. Jim Rigel.
Okay.
Went on to do the Lord of the Rings movie trilogy, for which he won 3 consecutive Academy Awards.
That's so fine.
I'm just saying Digital Productions, who did this film, were the people that said, okay, well, maybe we could start doing effects in computers in a big way. And the 5 that I just happened to Google went on to work on some of the biggest films of the
ever.
Next 40 years.
Okay, that's fucking insane.
Running the fucking CGI.
Yeah, that is
so
insane.
The whole legitimization of you can do a film in the box was this small group of people who made this film. It wasn't a massive commercial success.
No, it was not.
But it was a huge technical milestone. They all cut their teeth doing it. And then they all went off to work on little films like Star Wars, Terminator 2, or the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
That's fucking insane.
You can't refute
it's a truth fact.
After the 80s, and we got into the mid-90s, and this new technology matured, we went into CGI hell. Overuse, this, that, and the other.
Every given opportunity is like,
if you can make a film in the box, do it.
Do
Resident
it.
Evil series,
stop.
All this kind of stuff.
Stop.
Right?
Let's not.
But these guys were the ones who went, yeah, I reckon that's where films are going.
I fucking
and
love
they
that.
Weren't wrong.
They weren't wrong.
They
Dude,
weren't
this
wrong.
Literally paved the way. That's insane.
Right. It paved the way. I mean, yeah.
All right.
It did. It's a sweet little film. I can see why on its budget of $14 million, it only made $29 million.
That's still not bad.
It cleaned its face.
It did.
It cleaned its face.
It washed up after itself and
then
it got
forgotten.
And then no one remembered it. Yeah. It was a mediocre one-night stand for the 1984.
They've been trying to make a sequel for years. Seth Rogen expressed an interest in directing it.
Do it.
Steven Spielberg suggested an interest in remaking it.
That would be a different one. Yeah.
And I wonder, I mean, Seth Rogen, I can kind of see the film it would end up being.
I wouldn't mind that. Because I feel, okay, as
Would Seth Rogen keep it sincere? I don't know.
I think he would, yeah.
Right.
Because I know he's typecast and he does a certain genre of film, but he's capable of so much. It's unreal.
Well, he did, what was the superhero movie he did set in the 50s?
Oh, Green Hornet.
Yeah, that he was a big part of that because he's a big Green Hornet fan, isn't he?
Yeah, he was big for this. But then it was also, he wrote the Preacher series.
Yes, he adapted the Preacher series.
Okay.
For Amazon. Yeah.
He did,
because it was based on a very famous graphic novel by.
I can't remember who it was by.
It's going to annoy me if I don't find out. It's going to be by. Garth Ennis.
Okay.
Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon.
Well, he adapted that.
He did.
And it was
really
insane.
Good for one season.
Let's not talk about the rest of it. It was just a great one season TV show.
Brilliant one season.
Yeah, it was
brilliant
insane.
One season.
And it was translated perfectly from the graphic novel to that one season of television that it is. The rest of it doesn't exist. I think he'd do good, man. I think he'd do well with it. He's done some good roles. I mean, admittedly, he's just cast into a corner of hell at the minute, but
yeah, I mean, you know, he unfortunately got tarred with the James Franco brush. If your best mate is James Franco.
He did the whole public separation thing.
Yeah, but
there's the whole sort of focusing on potware, you know, where he does like pottery for
I know.
Smokers,
I just feel a little bit like if you're the guitarist in Lost Prophets, you must have seen someone come on the bus.
Your next band's not going to be doing headline tours
exactly.
to the O2 arenas.
Because everyone's going to go, you must have seen him come on the bus.
Yeah.
You must have thought, ooh.
How long were you in that band?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You never caught a glance at a phone. There's always that question. Oh. And with Seth Rogen, I'm always like, you must have been out some nights and just gone, all right, Franco. Do you know what I mean? You must have seen it a bit.
I don't know, man. This is all speculative and maybe, yeah. And I've got no fucking,
there is no right answer.
Yeah, there's no thoughts on it because I just don't care. this is borderline gossip and I'm literally not give less of a shit.
we've never been particularly gossip focused.
No, it just there's no interest.
No.
Do you want to play a game?
I would love to play a game.
Okay, so I'm not gonna lie, I was struggling to find a game for this, and then I found the perfect one. I found a quiz.
And quiz
that I thought was gonna be more Uwe Boll faced because it's about video game movies.
Right.
I'm very disappointed to let you know.
It isn't.
There is so little Uwe Boll in this quiz. It's upsetting. Oh. I know.
He's coming back though. He's coming back with a film with Armie Hammer.
I'm mates with him on Facebook. Oh. I'm getting in there, mate.
Oh yeah.
I'm getting in there.
Okay.
Me and Uwe Boll are going to be mates soon enough.
Right,
like
okay.
IRL friends. I'm fucking desperate for it.
I'd love to get an interview with Armie Hammer and just go, Armie, mate, you're looking great. You look good enough to eat.
Oh. All right. Let me ask my mate Uwe. I'll drop him a Facebook message later. You know what I mean? Because we're buddies.
Oh, you got any plans for dinner later?
You know what I mean? What's on for tea, mate?
You look a bit upset, Armie. What's eating you?
Quiz! Ready?
Yeah.
Number one. In which year was the original Super Mario Brothers movie released?
1984.
That was painful.
Sorry.
1993.
Ah.
1993. You were close.
What am I talking about? Mario was out in 1984, the original game.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. The same year of the NES.
Yeah.
So who played the lead human character Tim in Pokemon Detective Pikachu?
Oh, he's a good actor.
He is. Very good actor.
Can't remember his name.
Justice Smith.
Thank you.
Justice Smith.
Oh, he's not related to William, is he?
I don't know.
Let's hope not.
Again, don't care. the director of Warcraft 2016.
Oh, was Duncan
Jones.
Was the
son of which famous musician?
David Bowie.
David Bowie. Which famous mobile game was adapted into a film by Columbia Pictures in 2016?
Angry Birds.
It was.
And it wasn't just about Scottish women fighting outside a pub.
Upsetting, I know.
It would have been a better film.
I demanded a refund. Didn't get it. Which actor starred in both Max Payne 2008 and Uncharted in 2021?
Mark Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg.
He blinded an Asian man. Never forget.
Never forget. There's a joke. I'm not saying it. It's fine. It's fine. We're bigger. Which director has Sony chosen to direct their upcoming film adaptation of Gran Turismo? This quiz is quite old. I didn't read that question until right now.
Quite relevant to films we've covered as well. Yeah. Neil Blomkamp.
Neil Blomkamp. Which video game adaptation has the highest score on Rotten Tomatoes? This one's difficult,
ooh,
but it makes sense.
Video game adaptation has the highest score.
I mean, yeah.
On Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
And you say it's quite old, so it's not going to be The Last of Us.
No, it's not old. It's just going to be, it's just going to surprise you. It's not old.
Video game adaptation.
Yeah.
Bear with me.
The movie's from 2021, so it's fairly recent.
Oh, I've drawn a blank. I'm going to say...
I'm going to drop a hint.
Yeah.
That it was the Pokemon, I think. That was the culprit of the film. That might be a massive spoiler.
The Postwoman.
Werewolves Within.
Oh, that's a massive... We've got to take that. I'll take that out.
Yeah, it's a spoiler. Or just bleep it. And then
I'll just bleep it.
Yeah,
no, that's actually quite a good film.
Great film.
It's barely based on a video game.
Barely.
Barely.
Yeah.
And all the better for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, good film, though.
Which Nintendo video game character made a cameo in Wreck-It Ralph?
Zangief was in it. I know that's not the one they're thinking of. Yeah. Bowser?
Bowser.
There we go, yeah.
There you go. What is the highest grossing video game movie adaptation of all time?
I'm going to say...
I'm going to drop you a hint.
Yeah.
We covered it very, very, very early on. It was probably your third episode.
Warcraft.
It is Warcraft with $439 million.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Which came first?
Such a mid film.
Yeah, I know. Which came... What? This is stupid.
The Egg. Canonically, the Egg.
Which came first?
Because dinosaurs
have Need for
eggs.
Speed film or video game?
The video game.
Obviously, because this is a quiz about...
It's a video
about...
game adaptation.
Right. What a question.
Also, I played
there.
Need for Speed when I was 10.
Yeah, exactly. Fucking hell. In the 2023 Super Mario Brothers movie, which actor plays Donkey Kong?
Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen. See?
I watched it last night.
Gross. Which animation company is making the 2023... Super Mario Brothers movie. Guess when this came out, Rob?
Filmation.
Illumination.
Illumination. Illumination. Sorry, Illumination. Minion slot.
Three questions left. What is the original release date for the Super Mario Brothers movie?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. I'm going to say it is...
This has a specific date as well.
Oh.
Even though the question before this says the 2023 Super Mario Brothers movie.
Yeah.
And then the original release date is not 2023, just a little hint. It isn't far off.
It's 2024, I thought it came out. No, 2022?
Yes.
Okay.
But what date?
Because
there's a specific date on this quiz.
22nd of February.
Or 21st of December.
Oh, so close.
So close. So close.
Imagine if I just nailed it.
Bro, what the fuck is this quiz? I should have read this.
Is it a Super Mario Brothers question?
The last two are Super Mario Brothers questions.
So the last five. Okay, great.
Yeah. So how many Hollywood adaptations of Nintendo video games were released before... The Super Mario Brothers movie in 2023.
Okay, so you had Super Mario Brothers, the original.
Congratulations, that is the right answer. Question 15. I was going to let you swim, but there's no point. Anya Taylor-Joy's role as Princess Peach in Super Mario Brothers 2023 is her second in an animated film. Which 2019 release was her first?
Oh, I don't know.
I didn't even know that this was a film.
What is it?
I'm going to say it and you're going to go, they made a film of that.
The Emoji Movie.
No, Playmobil, the movie.
Oh,
like
bless
Lego,
them.
The movie.
Bless them. You know they what tried. I
mean? Yeah.
Someone at Playmobil was like,
we could probably get Anya Taylor-Joy.
We can do that.
Yeah.
And it sank without a trace.
Someone
at Playmobil
never
got
even
fired
known.
From a job they probably didn't even want.
Yeah. So there's that. That's the quiz. I think got seven or eight.
That's all
but
right.
That's fucking banging, mate.
If
and
I'd
I'm proud
known
of
more
you.
About the Mario movie, I think I'd have done a lot better.
If I'd have read that quiz before we got into it, I probably wouldn't have asked the last eight questions, if I'm honest with you. What are you rating this?
It's I'm not going to give it a fat 10.
It's not a fat 10.
It's not a fat 10 no. film. It's a celebrate your eights moment. It's, if you're in the
I really
right,
like
if you
that.
If you want to watch an 80s movie, this is squash concentrate. This is concentrated 80s movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's got all the cliches. It's got all of the sort of things that became very tired and very hackneyed.
Yeah.
But it's charming down to the bone.
Yeah.
It's not great, but it cleans.
But it kind of is.
It's kind of cute enough. Yeah. You know? So it's a good eight. It's a good eight.
I like that. Celebrate your eights. That's celebrate your eights. That's a good way to put it. I'm going to give it an eight.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it an eight because it's a warm blanket. It's a cup of soup on a cold day in a bus stop whilst you're waiting for your bus back to your trailer park.
Yeah.
It's just a lovely little something.
Right.
In an otherwise grey background.
It's Spielberg at home. We have Spielberg at home.
Poundland Action Man.
It's Poundland Spielberg.
Poundland Action Man.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Yeah. It's incredible for some reasons and it's dog shit for other reasons, but it's got a median of fucking lovely.
And I think the point you made about the CGI working as a museum piece and being sort of exhilarating in its own way for watching it and going, wow!
If you've ever played PlayStation 1, this takes you right back to that moment when you get to your first cutscene in Abe's Odyssey and you're like, holy shit, they can make films on PlayStation now.
Yeah.
It's that. You get that feeling immediately. Mm-hmm. It's that. It's incredible. You can do an 8. So you haven't got a comment corner this week. What I'm going to do is we're going to go through and we're going to give a shout out to our Patreon members, our family members. So we've got... I'm not going to full name everyone because this is insane.
Just read first names if it's surname.
First name. Yeah, I'm just going to do first names rather than dox our entire Patreon. Right. We've got Megan, Liv, Ferdinand.
Woo!
I'm going to read your surname. McCallum.
Woo!
Because I can't read your first name. I'm so sorry. Lindsay, Tyreek, Dan, Wee! Jarrett,
Tariq,
Jacob, Tariq. Sorry. I'm trying. SBJD.
Yeah.
Finn Bogey.
Woo!
We've got... Charlotte.
Yeah.
Jenny.
Yeah.
Amber.
Woo.
Ross.
Yeah.
Charles.
Yeah.
Lachlan.
Skirt.
Nell.
Tell him.
Emily. And then finally, we've got Emily. So those guys are all family members on our Patreon.
I discovered the Hitman Hype Man thing. Before.
Yeah, right. It's how fun is it?
Right?
Yeah.
I've been an international hit beast.
But thank you so much, guys. You support us on Patreon. You are the... blood in our veins.
You are the course sun in
into
our sky.
Our very recent erections after watching The Last Starfire.
You are the hand in our trousers.
You are the hairs on the back of our neck standing up every time a stranger whispers, just do it.
You are the ammunition in Oscar Pistorius' gun.
You are the bits in the orange juice that on the carton clearly said, no bits.
Oh no, that's a bad thing.
That's a great thing. Is what are you on about? Free thing? Bits?
Free bit.
Free bits.
Free bits.
You get extra bang for your buck.
What do the bits do? Why do they need free?
Protein.
Protein.
More nutrition, mate.
This is
what's
nonsense.
Better than orange? Orange bits.
Orange bits.
Well, that's it, guys. That's the end of the show. Because if we don't, this is it. We're caught in a loop of fucking nonsense.
Nonsense.
We love you all dearly. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. And thank you for the support. It means the absolute fucking world.
Now go tell your friends. Get them in here.
Go tell them how fun it is. Go, right. Hey. Have you heard of this?
Right.
And they'll be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
We're trying. We're putting effort in. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Listening and enjoying it. And that's all we need you to do.
That's all we need you to do.
But we'd like you to tell a friend.
But we
so
would
go
love you to tell someone about it. Because right. To be honest, we need it.
We do actually need it. We're shrinking a little.
Yeah, we love you so much.
We do. We really do. And to thank you for that. We know a lot of you listen at the start of your week on a Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So Ben's going to wrap up the thoughts, themes and feelings.
Ben's got a pre-written one this week as well.
No, he doesn't. No, I don't control what you say.
Ben wrote one for Ben.
Oh, right, okay.
In the first person.
Okay.
Apparently we're talking in third person.
Right, okay, good.
Good.
Adventure
and purpose can come calling in any shape or form, my dear listener. And more often than not, it's when you most need it. Not only for when you just feel ready. The real adventure is being brave enough to stand up and answer the call, having the courage to navigate the unknown, and trusting, believing in yourself enough to know that you're capable of handling anything that might arise. As Centauri says, may the luck of the seven pillars of Gulu be with you at all times! Now, dear listener, Go believe in yourself as much as we do and defend your frontier, whatever this may be.
Ah, that was a nice one.
Thanks, man. You I was trying to do nice it in like ones. A 1950s radio voice, but then good. I did like one word, adventure, and lost it.
My good time boy, my rotten soldier.
Oh, 27 bones in your hand. 28 when I'm bored.